Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high, there's a
welcome to episode 15 of Across the Bifrost. I'm your host, Sung Soo, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Pat Dunford. Before we dive into things, I want to give a shout out to Discount Games Incorporated, who's been providing us with garbage trucks to give to people, and Muzon Minis for always supporting me and everyone else in their podcasting forays. You can check them out at discountgamesincorporated.com or Muse on Minis and MuseOnStore.com, respectively. I also do want to mention our Patreon. It's growing. It's blooming? Bludgeoning? Definitely not bludgeoning. That's the wrong word. It's growing, is what I'll say. You can check us out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Again, all of our main episodes are free. Patrons just get a couple benefits, like early episodes and like some small bonus episodes, like where we rank the Star Wars films and other things like that. So if you want to support the podcast, please do us a favor and check out patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Okay, without any further ado, here is my conversation with the great Pat Dunford. On the line now, we have the Doctor Strange of Marvel Crisis Protocol, Pat Dunford. Pat, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, son. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for asking. It's been cold in Colorado, but it's starting to warm up, and I always appreciate that. Why did I write this outline like this? Because we're not doing Australia anymore, right? Okay, boom, just jump in there. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about rosters, and I always typo that to roosters. I don't know if you've noticed that, Pat, but I'm just kind of leaning into it.
Even if I hadn't noticed, all the little rooster emoticons in the Discord would tip me off, so.
It's very helpful for everyone to tell me when I spell something wrong. So in episode 13, we covered crisis cards. In episode 9, we talked about tactics cards, and we've done a lot of different pods on different heroes throughout the game. So today, really, we're going to bring that all together into roster creation. And Pat, before you dive in, do you mind going over exactly what combination of all these things creates a roster?
Sure. The roster is the selection that you bring to the game before you play and you share with your opponent. It consists of 6 crisis cards, 3 extract crisis and 3 secure crisis, 8 team tactics cards, and 10 hero slots, which can also be filled by Infinity Gems.
Awesome. So it'll be interesting. Obviously, that's not going to grow. So this is only going to become harder, and I think roster creation or selection is one of the deepest parts of the game. It's one of the things I'm most excited about, and it's one of the things that you can really think about a lot outside of playing the game. So where do you like to start when you're creating a roster?
Yeah, you're right that you can think about it a lot, and it's really deep. And it's funny because even... as this game is only just beginning, it's been out for a few months, there aren't that many releases, but already it's so difficult to make a roster, right?
Yeah, it is definitely not easy.
There's just so many difficult choices you have to make in terms of what you're going to include and what you're going to cut. So for me, when I start, I think there's a few different ways you can start, but I think the thing that I do most commonly is I pick particular characters that I want to play with. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, almost. Yes, 100%. It's normally a character, sometimes an affiliation, which to me is just like an amalgamation of characters that I want to pick. And then I'm trying to find ways to kind of maximize or synergize with them. Is that what you end up doing, Pat?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the main thing. For me, I usually get hooked on a particular synergy that I want to try out. And that might be something like, oh, I wonder how Venom works in the Avengers. Or, it looks like Vision's beam would make him really good in Cabal. And I think about that kind of synergy, and then I expand the team out from there.
No, absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense. After that, you can kind of look at tactics cards that help what your heroes want to do. And then talking about crisis is an interesting area too. But let's start there. Let's start with heroes. I'm sorry. So we both agree that when we create a roster, we're usually starting it somehow from a hero or character point. So do you usually start with the affiliation leader? Or just the hero in particular?
So I think you kind of have to think about both maybe simultaneously, because the affiliation leadership has such a big impact on what the characters do that you can't really think about them in a vacuum. We've taken this for granted, but I think you and I both agree that whenever you're building your team for a game out of your roster, you'll always want to have an affiliated team that has a leadership, right?
Yes.
You just have to, because the benefits you get for that are so big and the opportunity cost that you're missing out on is so low, right? There's so many great characters in the game. I've never been in a position where I felt like my team that's affiliated has worse characters than an unaffiliated team.
So no, absolutely. And you're not even mentioning tactics cards yet, right? So no, I agree that the loss that you get for going unaffiliated is quite large.
Right. So I always want to have the leaders available, and I'm always thinking about which characters synergize with the leadership. So that's, I think, where the core synergy comes from. And then after that, I think about what other characters will help round out the team in different situations. And those different situations is when you start thinking about things like crisis cards, right? Because I think about things like, oh, what if I need a lot of characters to pick up cosmic cube fragments? Or what if I need to run down the middle of the table on the gamma bunkers crisis? That's going to change how I make my team. But I suppose what I do with this core is I think about the main synergies or characters I want to play, and then I try to fill my roster out with other characters that will complement them in different situations so that I have a lot of choice available when I make my final team.
Okay, that definitely makes some sense. Yeah, I can see you doing it. Do you have any examples of kind of that in practice so we could follow along maybe?
Yeah, so an example would be something like, I really like the synergy of Hulk plus Captain America. I think that synergy is really fun in that Hulk is really powerful, but it can be a little bit vulnerable to getting ganged up on and killed easily. And Captain America with his bodyguard makes Hulk so tough that it becomes very unlikely your opponent could kill him over the course of a game. So that's a synergy I like and that I often want to build into a team. Now, I'm not choosing Captain America there for his leadership, but obviously, once this plan has two Avengers, I'm probably committing to the Avengers leadership most of the time, right? Especially as those two characters together cost 10 threat. I can't reasonably expect to make another team in most circumstances. So what I'm doing then is thinking, okay, I've got this Avengers team that has two affiliated characters and is costing 10 threat. What options might I want to fill it out? What am I going to take at 15 points? What am I going to take at 17 points? What am I going to take at 20 points? And how might I want to change that? So I might look at saying, okay, I want a 2-cost character and a 3-cost character so that I have 4 characters at 15 points. And so I'm going to throw in Black Widow because she's 2-cost and she's Avengers affiliated. And then my 3-cost character could be anyone I want. Iron Man, Shuri, Baron Zemo, you name it.
No, that makes a ton of sense. I think it's important there to consider, like you said, not only the heroes I want to synergize, but how are they going to fit in the different crisis point values that are available, not only in the crisis that I'm bringing, but a crisis that an opponent might bring. And I definitely think it's wise to be able to plan for the 15. I don't worry about the 20 so much, but I do like to make sure I have a good plan for a 15 and a 17 for ideal circumstances.
Definitely agree. I don't worry about the 20 too much, but I do, one thing I do after I've made my roster of 10 characters is I do a quick check to make sure I have a couple of different combinations that will add up to the different points, even to 20. Because the last thing you want is to accidentally find yourself in a situation where you can't take the characters you want and also reach the threat value.
No, that's a great point. And we talked about that in our listener episode, like, is it ever right to play a point down? And we kind of hemmed and hawed, but sometimes it's right. But obviously, we would prefer to avoid that if possible.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So I think what that means is you end up in a situation where you've got, at least I find, I've got the cool characters that I want to be playing for that particular day. And then I've got a bunch of supporting cast who I'm going to fill in depending on the threat level of the crisis and what the crisis is demanding of me.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And we're talking about affiliation a lot here. So I think this is kind of like a natural segue. We've talked about it previously, but how viable do you find two affiliation rosters to be?
Ooh, I think it's tough but doable. I think there's a couple of things that make it difficult. On the character side, having to take multiple leaders and enough affiliated characters that you have flexibility while building your teams at all threat levels for different crises is pretty demanding, right?
Agreed.
Now, at least if you're doing two affiliations, you can, for example, take five Avengers, five Cabal, and you've got a lot of flexibility in how you build your teams, because you can take from one pool of characters and add to the other and still make perfectly good affiliated teams, as long as the majority are in the affiliation that's shared by your leader. So that all works fine, but it makes things a little bit tricky, and it makes it so that you don't have very many slots for characters that aren't affiliated to either team. Characters like Venom are very popular right now, but really hard to fit in a double affiliation roster, I found.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with that, and you touched on it a little bit, but then tactics cards is really where I've always felt the most choked up when looking at a two-roster team, right? The affiliated tactics cards are hands down the strongest, right? I think we all agree on that. And there's something we want to take. It's a large selling point to any given affiliation. And for me, losing 2-3 on a particular affiliation that I might not play is just, it's a tough pill to swallow sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. The characters are difficult, but the tactics cards are really difficult. And I've had a lot of rosters where I've been able to make double affiliation work for characters, but I've been really unhappy with the team tactics cards. And that's because I think generally I want at least one, and often two, and sometimes even more, affiliated tactics cards. The ones that I particularly find myself taking a lot right now, if I'm playing Avengers, Avengers Assemble, I think is in maybe 90% of my teams. And with Cabal, I really like Dark Reign, and I really like Cosmic Invigoration.
No, those make a ton of sense, and I know the internet has been harsh on me because of my evaluation of Killmonger, but my negative of Killmonger has always simply circled back to the fact that I really feel like he demands a crisis card, or excuse me, a tactics card that is brought with him, and that's just one of the reasons I mark him down.
Oh, yeah, but that's a great point, right? Because Wakanda is a team where Wakanda Forever is an incredible team tactics card, and I think you always want to take it just like Avengers Assemble. But then you also have characters that particularly incentivize taking certain team tactics cards. And I think Killmonger that you mentioned is the perfect example. He's a character that is in many ways defined by his tactics card. And if your roster is going to include Wakanda as one of your two affiliations, then you probably want to include all four Wakandan characters, because there aren't that many. And you want some options in regards to which you take in any given scenario. And taking all of them makes Wakanda Forever better, right? Because it affects all of them. And at that point, if I have Killmonger in my roster because I'm playing Wakanda, I probably also want to take Usurp the Throne. And so you can end up in a situation where by taking an affiliation, you don't just have the affiliated cards, but you have the character-specific cards that are most commonly associated with that affiliation, and it all stacks up to meaning that it's really difficult to get eight cards down to five that work for both of your affiliations.
No, I think that's a great distillation, right? I think if we're gonna go with the double affiliation roster, in my head, we're looking at 2-3 total affiliation specific cards, right? And then you can run kind of your core, if that's like Brace, Mission Objective, Patch Up, whatever you choose to be kind of your core, and you have to rotate around them. So I think it's doable. I think it's tight. I do think heroes like the Winter Soldier help. What do you think about him slotting into this and how that mechanic kind of changes roster construction in general?
So that's a great point. I think he helps a lot in letting you move easily between multiple affiliations. He's a character that's really useful to sit on a defensive, secure objective at the back of the table. And because of that, he has a role that any team appreciates. And so he can join a lot of teams and be useful. The reason I'm making that point is I think there are some characters who are very specialized, where if they had the same rule as Winter Soldier, where they could join any affiliation, it would still be less appealing. Yeah, I mean, I think it makes character selection easier for having multiple affiliations in your roster, but the problem is it doesn't make team tactics any easier. And in some ways, it makes it harder because he can't be affected by the affiliated team tactics. So he isn't really doing you any favors in that regard. He has the same pressure where you want to take the really good affiliated team tactics, but if you have the minority of characters on your team are affiliated, then maybe you're hurting yourself more than you're helping yourself in some circumstances.
It's an interesting take. And just to circle back, I apologize. The Winter Soldier, Bucky, has a passive ability called Rogue Agent. We covered that when Trivia and I looked at Winter Soldier. And he counts as an affiliated character, but only during squad building. So he could count as an Asgardian in order to reach the affiliation bonus, but then you can't use Odin's blessing on him. He's not an Asgardian during the actual gameplay. And that's what Pat was alluding to. Now we have these extremely powerful cards, and maybe we only have two Wakandans, right? And Wakanda Forever is obviously stronger the more Wakandans you have on them.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he helps, but I think where he helps more is if you're taking a... If you're in a team situation where you're not particularly valuing the affiliated cards and you're trying to maximize on individual character power or synergies between them, and you're less worried about your affiliated team tactics cards, and because you're trying to maximize on synergies, maybe you have fewer affiliated characters, and then he can plug that gap.
No, that makes sense. I will spitball and... One of the things I did actually just last night in the one game I got to play is that's basically how I ended up building my Asgard roster. I find like I'm always going to have a place for Odin's Blessing between Loki and Thor. So the additional characters I bring aren't going to be necessarily utilizing those tactics the same way like Avengers Assemble or Wakanda Forever do. Is that the right? Anyway, that's what I said. Where you're affecting all the models with that, right? I still have good targets for Odin's Blessing. So I was willing to just end up taking, Bucky to kind of fill out my thing, and then more characters that don't receive that benefit than I do when I'm playing a Wakanda or an Avengers roster. I hope that rambling makes sense.
Yeah, it does, because Odin's Blessing is a card that affects one character. So in some ways, when you're saying, I've got Thor, I'm in Asgard, I've got Odin's Blessing, it's almost like a character card for him, right? Because he's so tough. He is the perfect target. He's the best Asgardian to be targeted by Odin's Blessing, and it can only target Asgardians. So you're not giving up a lot by having fewer Asgardians in your team because their powerful card only affects one of them. Whereas the other affiliations all have cards that benefit multiple characters. Avengers does this the most with Shake Off and Avengers Assemble. Sorry, Second Wind and Avengers Assemble. Wakanda does it as well with Wakanda Forever, and Wakanda Forever is so strong that I'd say it probably is up there with Avengers. Cabal, not so much. Cosmic Invigoration doesn't care about affiliation, which is nice. And Dark Reign does care, but you could make an argument with Dark Reign that you don't need every character to reroll their attacks against the target, because the target's going to be dead long before that matters. So you could see it being a bit more like a single character use card. So maybe in some ways, some affiliations just do it better, right? Maybe Asgard and Cabal is a much better pair because they have less pressure on their tactics cards and they can take more unaffiliated characters.
No, and that'll be one of the interesting things to kind of evaluate as we move forward, right? As we get wider. And I don't want us to go over in time. I know, and I apologize, the last episode went over. Pat and I like to keep these episodes down. So we'll circle back to this if we have time. But I think that's a good... base on how we look at heroes for roster selection. Pat, is there anything else you really feel like we need to add to that?
For heroes, no, I think that's good.
Okay, so the only other hero thing I'll do in order to contradict myself immediately, which is great podcast creation, is like, what do you think of Infinity Gems in terms of roster construction, right? Because they do end up taking a roster spot.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't know if Infinity Gems make your roster more flexible or less flexible. I think I said that when we discussed Infinity Gems last time on our after credit scene. But for those that didn't listen, Infinity Gems, I've heard people say having a cheap Infinity Gem in my roster is great because it's like having a cheap character. I can plug it in when I am a little bit short on threat and I can reach the cap. And that is true. But the problem is, you can only plug it in if you're also taking the gem bearer. And those two things combined are a lot of threat points. And usually the things that cost a lot of threat are harder to fit in your teams. Right? So I don't think it's entirely accurate to say, oh, if I take the mind gem, then my Asgardian team is more flexible. Because it's not a 1-point choice. It's a 5-point choice with Loki.
No, I think that's a great point. And to circle back about the pretend roster I made before, if I'm always counting on taking Thor, Winter Soldier or Valkyrie and Loki, then the Mind Gem does provide me a lot of flexibility, right? And that single affiliation roster, I know I'm going to be playing Loki because he's extremely powerful. Then it does provide you an extra layer of flexibility. If you're creating a roster that isn't Loki-centric, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. if there's a chance you might leave Loki on the bench to illustrate what Pat's saying, then the Mind Gem doesn't provide you any additional benefit, right? You're talking about a large point swing in order to get that 1 point flexibility. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, for example, people love to include cheap two-cost characters in their roster, like Black Widow and Okoye, because it gives you more options when you're building your roster. I'm a big fan of that. I think it makes a lot of sense. But if you just replace that with gems and then you don't take the expensive character, you lose all that flexibility and you could find yourself not being able to create lists of the correct threat value at all. I think in a lot of ways, gems to characters are a bit like affiliated cards for team tactics in that they're only useful if you're taking that character and you're essentially committing at roster level to say, I'm going to take this character a lot because you're giving up a lot of flexibility in your squad building if you don't take them.
No, that's a great point. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so I think the way I see it is probably there's going to be exceptions and you can make a lot of different things work. But as a general guideline, I think the way I'm going to play it is if I'm choosing gems to work with specific characters, it's because I plan to use those characters pretty much all the time. And that's probably going to happen more in a single affiliation list. And I'm going to see the same thing with my team tactics cards, where they're going to work closely with that affiliation. Whereas if I want more flexibility in which affiliation I pick, I'm probably going to take fewer gems and I'm probably going to take more universal team tactics cards.
No, I definitely agree that gems are going to be one of the luxuries of being single affiliation. I wholeheartedly agree with you there. And I do have a question for the listeners and for you, Pat, is how often do you find yourself using your 9th or 10th hero on a roster anyway? For me, and I might be too limited in my experimentation, but I find myself not taking them at all, really. Very occasionally do I kind of dip that deep into the bag.
I think I do use them, but it's always a little bit hard to say because you never know what threat levels you're going to get, you know? And so my 10th hero might be a particular plan only for a 20 threat crisis. And then I play a day of games, I just don't have a 20 threat crisis, you know? So I think when I include them, I have a plan for each of them. And I have struggled to get down to 10, even with a plan for each of them. But I think it's inevitable that in, for example, your standard crisis event of 3 rounds, you're probably not going to use all 10 characters.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's one of the reasons that I would encourage people to get out there and mess around with Infinity Gems, see how they feel. I think it'll be the game is so deep and Pat and I are talking about things, but really, you know, we don't have a ton of experience with it. And we really want to know where people end up. You know, it's great for people to think outside the box and test things. And if you do have anything you want to tell us, you can jump on Facebook at facebook.com/COWargaming or on Twitter, twitter.com/SungSu. And of course, patrons, you guys know the Discord is always popping and we love to hear your crazy ideas and rosters. So Pat, I usually go to crisis cards next. Is that where you go?
So I think crisis cards are really important for your roster. And I think a lot of people don't give them enough credit. I think as the game evolves, I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes more common that people start at crisis cards because they are the thing that you have fewest options. They have the least flexibility. And they arguably change the game more than any other choice in your roster.
Okay, no, I could definitely see that. And obviously having control over half of them is interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things right now with the meta being so undefined, which again is a great selling point of Crisis Protocol. It's really hard because I do find myself considering like, okay, well, what if they do this? What if they do this? Because anything is really viable when I show up at any of my local crisis events.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't really want to speculate on how many crises we could have down the line or what they'll be. Obviously, it's going to be more than we have now, but that alone might change how important choosing your crisis is. What I will say, though, is I think the crises we have right now are different enough as we discussed in our last episode, right? They're different enough that they reward very different character choices, and some of them can be really well supported by the right team tactics card choices. So I think it works. It makes a lot of sense to build your roster with all three in mind together. So for example, to give a concrete example of what I mean, I find myself picking Wakandan Herbs as one of my crisis if I have enough space to include cards like Avengers Assemble and Drop Off in my team tactics cards, because I really value the extra movement for the herb holder in that crisis. And if I don't have enough space in my roster to include those cards, I won't take that crisis.
Okay, that makes sense. I hadn't... Sorry, I'm processing that as you say it. I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you say that, that makes a lot of sense. That's not exactly how my brain approaches it, but I get what you're saying.
Do you know what I mean? And then another thing that I think about is, for example, I have a rough idea in my head of the preferred team composition I would like. So for example, I might have my 10 characters and I might think, ooh, my preferred team composition has a lot of cheap range characters in Cabal, you know? It's like a Cabal list plus Iron Man and Shuri. And then I think, well, if that's my preferred list that I want to be playing, which crises are good for that? Oh, crises that have a lot of scoring elements and ones that encourage things to spread out. So then maybe if that's my preferred team and I've got those characters in my roster, then maybe my secure crises are going to be things like Extremist Consoles and Serum, and my extracts are going to be, for example, they're going to be Cosmic Cube Fragments and Spider Infected, because those things together all complement that team composition I want to take.
Okay, I'm with you there. That makes sense for sure.
What about you? Do you think about it in that way?
Yeah. I guess I'm a little maybe more narrow-minded, and I'm not saying this in a good way. But usually, let's circle back to your earlier example, Cap plus Hulk. I've done a lot of playing with Hulk just because I want him to work. I think he's a great demo piece. When I have him on the table in a game, I feel like people just stop and go like, oh, who's that? It's the Hulk. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It's a cool game. Would you like a game after this? So if I'm creating a roster based around Hulk, or last night I was creating a roster based around Thor, who's amazing, by the way. I tend to try to find crises that really exemplify that one character. So I might be a little more narrow banded, but if I'm going to make a Hulk centrist thing, then I'm going to have Hulk or characters around Hulk that support him. I'm going to have tactics around Hulk that support him. And I want a crisis where Hulk is kind of set up to succeed, right? And Spider is not one that I want Hulk playing at all, for example, right? That random movement can just destroy him.
Yes, absolutely. There's definitely that flip side where maybe it's not that you take crises that are particularly good for your team, but you know there's certain crises that are terrible and you just make sure not to take those. Because our selection isn't so great, maybe you just have to do that. You have to read out the bad options and then you're stuck with what you've got left.
Yeah, I think that's definitely wise. Do points come into effect at all when you're looking at your crisis cards? Is that a big influencer for you?
So we discussed this a bit last episode and I think it's the same. For me personally, no. Because when I'm building a roster, I'm already trying to, as I said, have a wide range of supporting characters that work for any threat value. But I think if you don't take that approach, then the threat level of the crisis is much more important. And right now, the one you can control a bit better is 17 threat value, right? Because there are just way more crises with that for both secure and extract. So maybe if you want to play a certain threat, I'd say aim for 17, build a team you like, and you'll have a good chance of playing it. But because your opponent will, as often as you, have the chance to choose crisis threat levels, I wouldn't bank on that. I think it's a little bit foolish to do so. So for me, it's not that important. I would rather just be flexible and able to deal with whatever threat level is thrown at me.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense. Is there anything else you think we need to cover on crisis? Or can we kind of jump over to tactics cards now?
Yeah, let's jump back to tactics cards.
So yeah, we've obviously mentioned tactics incestuously throughout this entire episode. It's not as cut and dry as like I do one and then I do two and then I do three, right? You really do have to kind of consider all these things together. But crisis cards, again, we talked about the limitation. Only getting 8 is pretty huge. And Pat, how do you normally start going through this? Do you have like a core set of tactics you always want to take? Do you start with the ones that exemplify the strategy you're doing? Or what is your mindset heading into this?
Yeah, so we talked already about how the affiliation massively impacts tactics cards. And it's hard to have multiple affiliations because of that. I think with tactics cards, when I'm picking them, they fall into one of several categories. They're either the tactics cards that I think are really powerful for the affiliations I want to play, and I can't play the affiliation without them, or I don't want to. Or they're tactics cards that are universally really useful, and I want to include them in my roster to give me a bit more flexibility in which tactics I choose. Or they're tactics cards that are specifically designed with a plan in mind to do well at a particular crisis, and they complement my characters in completing the crises that I've selected. But it's very difficult, I think, to meet all three criteria with multiple tactics cards when you only have 8 to choose from, especially if you have more than one affiliation.
Yeah, again, I think for me, this is really where multi-affiliation kind of not falls apart, but becomes a very... Are you comfortable having maybe like a B list of tactics cards or a B level of choices of tactics cards in order to get the affiliation flexibility? And I'm not saying you shouldn't be playing multi-affiliation. I just think it's a real choice that you have to make when you're kind of staring at it.
Yeah. The tactics cards gives you a lot of flexibility in how you approach the game, but because so many are tied to characters, you do have to be looking back over your shoulder at your character selection when you're choosing them. There's also this other thing to consider, right, which is some tactics cards, universal ones I'm talking about, are really good counters to what your opponent is choosing. Cards like Sucker and Disarm and Trip Up and Escort to Safety can all be really relevant to counter an opponent's plan. I had a really great game last week where I was playing Killmonger with Usurp the Throne, and my opponent chose Escort to Safety so that as soon as I chose an Usurp the Throne target and attacked them, they could be escorted away. Right? But it's really cool,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
But you just can't meet all these different needs with 8 cards. So you've got to kind of decide what you want to do. You almost have to pick a lane. Do you take cards that are always going to be useful, or do you take a selection of cards to counter what your opponent takes? And once again, multi-affiliation makes that harder. You know what? As we talk about this, I'm becoming increasingly convinced that multi-affiliation is just not the way to go. Every time I see people talking about it, what they tell me, the reason they're taking it is for flexibility. But they're actually losing flexibility because they're forcing themselves to take particular characters in their roster, not because they give them flexible choices, but because they make their lists work. You know, they make them meet their criteria. And they're giving up on a huge amount of flexibility with tactics cards. Like, if I choose to play Avengers and I only have Avengers cards, then I have the flexibility of having loads of different teams' tactics options. But if I choose to play Avengers and half of my cards are Cabal, I lose all that flexibility. So I actually think multiple affiliations are less flexible than having just a single one. And team tactics cards has really hammered that home in my head.
Okay, so I'll play devil's advocate here. And then obviously Pat and I are talking about this based on the models that are released currently. But can we look at Asgard and Avengers as the, to me, they are the sterling example of, I believe you could go multi-affiliation there. And I get what you're saying. Tactics cards are tighter. But at the same time, to me, it does provide an interesting amount of flexibility. If I think I'm going to be playing into someone that's a heavy amount of status ailments, status effects things, I can switch over. Thor can run it. I have Thor and Loki, so I have the flexibility to kind of pull them into Avengers pretty easily. And again, the Odin's Blessing card, so I'm only taking Odin's Blessing and Avengers Assemble. Because of the overlap from the Asgardians, Avengers Assemble still has like a high success or usage rate, right? And because I have Odin's Blessing, I still have viable, legitimate targets for it. So that's my devil's advocate thing I'll throw out there for multi-affiliation.
Okay, so my counterpoint to this, I think you're right. I agree with you. I think that way myself often, and I know a lot of people think the same. My counter argument is, yes, you can make it work. What you just said is correct. It is viable. You have enough stuff. But what are you actually... But you're still losing out on stuff, right? Because you still have some characters that aren't benefiting. You still are taking some characters in your roster that you might not otherwise pick. And you're still giving up on team tactics card selection in comparison to if you only have one affiliation. So you can make it work. You're not giving up much, but you're giving up something. And the reason why I think that's not great is I don't think you're gaining anything from having multiple affiliations. I think all the affiliations are really good, but right now I don't have a perception that choosing between them gives you much of a strategic advantage in comparison to choosing between tactics cards or having more flexibility at character of character choices in your roster.
No, that's an interesting, like, I understand what you're saying there. And I'm not, again, I'm not married to it. I happen to be in the camp of single affiliation is the way to go. But I'm curious, as they continue to release the games, if there are more factions that are more focused, like Odin's Blessing, on buffing a singular person, not buffing, but preventing or protecting a singular person, it might be more viable. Yeah, okay, so the theoretical benefits of going Avengers Asgard. During hero selection, you are less certain of which one I'm going to play. Do they play different enough for that to matter? That's subject for debate. Yeah, so no, I get what you're saying. It's interesting. I mean, one of the concessions is I am taking Bucky there, where I usually wouldn't want to take Bucky, but I'm taking him simply so I can fill out my Asgardian side. So, yeah, I'm not sure. But again, it'll be interesting to see the way Atomic Mask expands it. I could definitely see a road where it could be more viable, especially as a meta settles in more. If there are heavier status ailment rosters out there, I think it would be interesting to be able to threaten Asgardian, but it might not be needed right
now. Yeah, I mean, I'm advocating a lot for single affiliation, but I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever had a single affiliation roster. I always take multiple affiliations, but I think just discussing this with you now is kind of changing my mind. That being said, I do think there are plenty of valid reasons why you would take multiple affiliation that aren't necessarily to do with maximizing your competitive. Right, and I think a big one that is really relevant is if you're planning to play multiple games, which is where this really matters anyway, then just giving yourself some variety is quite nice. Maybe you don't want to commit to always playing Thor in every game because you're playing Asgard, you know, and especially in the smaller affiliations like Asgard and Wakanda, if you're only playing in that affiliation, you're basically playing with the same characters the whole time, right? Because you're basically taking 3 out of 4 at least, or maybe 3 out of 5 if you count Bucky. And that means you're going to have quite repetitive experience. So maybe you take multiple affiliation just to give yourself some variety, and I think that's really valid. Maybe you take multiple affiliation because you can't make up your mind. That's a bit less valid, and you should probably think a bit harder and come to the right decision.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And like I said, for me, the choking point on playing multi-affiliation rosters has always been the tactics cards. There's kind of always this core group of tactics cards I want to take. There's a couple specialty ones I want to be able to take. And then, of course, there's the affiliation ones that you want to take on top of that. 8 just fills up really quickly. And let's be clear, I am not advocating to increase the roster size. I see this on Facebook at least once a day. I am not advocating for more crises, more heroes, or more tactics cards. I think this is a very interesting and dynamic decision point. I think it's a great restriction that they have. I wouldn't be shocked if in the future different affiliations were allowed to bring different amounts of tactics cards. I think that could be really cool. Or a hero might even be able to give you an additional tactics card. Mm-hmm. But for general roster construction, I like the rails that Atomic Mass Games has put around it. I like the fact that you do have to make really hard decisions, and I can't have my cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I like it too. In case people get me wrong, I enjoy the agonizing that I've been doing over what is correct. It adds to the fun of the game for me and the depth. And one of the things about roster creation that I quite enjoy is you don't have to go into this level of depth, right? You can just take the characters and the cards that you like or that you think are cool or that you want to play with, and you can just have fun. There is nothing that's forcing you to try and optimize it or strategize on it in the way that we are. So I'm a big fan of the system. I think it works for players no matter what they're trying to get out of the game. And it is, like you said, at a sweet spot where the decision is tough but fun.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think the decisions you have to make are very real in roster selection, and I really enjoy them. The fact that Pat and I can just kind of talk endlessly, like the conversations we've had offline about these things are very deep. It happens in the Discord all the time, and it can be a lot of fun. And then I think it's really, really interesting. Well, actually, is there anything else you want to talk about tactics cards?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay, so we all all of us kind of have like a go-to roster, right? We kind of have like a list where like if the fate of the world was in the balance, this is the Space Jam analogy. Have you ever seen Space Jam, the movie?
No, I haven't. Is that
okay? Well, it's about like Looney Tunes and Michael Jordan.
Oh, right. I'm thinking of, what am I thinking of?
Oh, that's Spaceballs. Ah, you're thinking of, yeah. With Rick Moranis. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also a great movie. So if the fate of the universe rested on a game, don't ask me how we got here. There are aliens. They've come down to Earth and they've decided that like the fate of the universe rests in your ability to win this game, Pat. This game of Marvel Crisis Protocol. Mm-hmm. We've just been kind of beaming this podcast into the ether. This is what the aliens heard. They've identified Pat. They're playing Pat for the fate of the galaxy. You have like a roster that you're going to play, right? You have like a go-to roster where you kind of feel comfortable and safe in. So I want to know, how do you go about evaluating new characters fitting into that roster? Since MCP does seem to have a very steady stream of new characters always being introduced to the meta, right? We get a couple characters a month at the minimum, it seems.
Okay, so how would I pick new characters to usurp the old ones in my favorite roster? The first thing that I would look at is the threat value of the character. One of the things that I see a lot when people post up their rosters in our Discord and on Facebook is I don't think people value highly enough the lower threat characters for the flexibility they bring to roster creation. And people get really excited by the expensive characters because they're really cool. And then they throw in some leaders who are also themselves pretty expensive. And they immediately lose flexibility in how they can actually make their rosters add up to the correct threat values and kind of pigeonhole themselves into taking, you know, their 10 characters at 17 threat can only make like two different combinations because they have to take the 1-2 cost character they have, for example, or the 2-3 cost characters, whatever it might be. So I would make sure that I have a variety of threat values, especially cheaper threat values first.
Okay, so you'd only want to replace a 3 with a 3, theoretically.
Yeah, speaking. Or maybe it creates a domino effect, right? A chain reaction, where if I replace a 3 with a 4, then maybe I have to find someone else in my team to be swapped out as well, so that I have a good variety, and I'm not accidentally having everyone be 4 threat.
Nope, that makes a ton of sense.
And then after that, I think I look at the role that the character plays on the table. Going back to our last episode when we talked about crises, are they going to be good on defensive or offensive secure objectives? Are they really fast for extracts? Are they tough to hold objectives? And then I'm probably going to be looking at my roster and thinking, do I want to upgrade a character? And when I say upgrade, obviously I don't mean a strict upgrade. I'm not expecting newer releases to just be better than old ones. But I mean, do something to complement my team that I've taken this original character for, but now I think the second one does it better. So for example, maybe I think that I wanted a fast objective holder, and originally I had Spider-Man as my long-moving objective grabber, but now I want to replace him with Black Panther because he's also an L mover, but he's tougher. And that makes him better for holding extract objectives, for example. Or the other thing I consider is, do I want to change what my roster is good at? So rather than replacing Spider-Man, maybe I add Black Panther to complement Spider-Man, take out a different character, and now my roster is even better at those kind of crises because I can take both of them.
No, that makes a ton of sense. I did the same thing, or a very similar thing, right, when Panther came out. Panther, for me, replaced Black Widow. But then I had to do some point shifting because I'm essentially replacing a 2-point character with a 4-point character, and I wanted to be sure I could still hit the different threat values that I needed to hit for the crisis availability. So, similar mindset. I think it's great to evaluate them, and I just wanted to hit on that real quickly. Since we are always looking at new things, I want to encourage people, like, nothing's solved. I don't think this game will ever be solved, and you need to kind of keep iterating, keep looking at things that you're doing, because there's a lot of different things coming out. It might not even be a hero, right? It might be a tactic card, or a crisis card that ends up making its way into your roster, and it's kind of important to kind of evaluate all of them, and hopefully, Pat and I help you a little bit with that, with our recaps of the different factions or the affiliations as they come out. Just keep iterating, keep thinking, and let us know what you're doing.
No roster is perfect, and no roster is wrong, right? There's so much variety in this game. People are going to come up with different rosters, and that's cool. That's okay. Don't feel pigeonholed into taking the same thing as everyone else. Try out stuff. I'm sure you'll have good results.
Yeah, I definitely think this game is one of the really hard games to netlist with, right? It's not one of those things where, like in Magic the Gathering, where everyone's just going to play, you know, red chunky stompy all of a sudden. There's a lot of flexibility, and there's a lot that goes into how you play it, how you deploy things, and then how you execute, and then, you know, you as a player, how do you want to play the game? So, Pat, I think that's a great high-level overview of roster selection. Everyone for listening, thank you so much. I hope you found this beneficial. And for patrons, stay tuned for after the credit scene. Pat, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
I think that was good. Anything else you want to hit in? Otherwise, I think we covered everything.
I think that was tight. I don't know the total time, yeah, but I think it was good.
46 minutes.
About what you want. I don't think there's much editing required.
Yeah, No. Very, very small. Our editing usually comes from you and I being overly polite. So I will be talking. I will think you want to interject, so I pause. Mm-hmm. You decline, and then I have to edit that gap. Mm-hmm. But that's quick.
Yes.
So the after the credit themes, I thought we would do the FAQ. Did you follow along in Discord about